So we're just resuming the interview with Brian Rose, and Brian's just been showing me a whole load of fascinating rugby and cricketing photos from his time when he was at Fieldings. Brian, can you just tell us about the sports and social side of Fielding and Platt? Most people remember them as happy days.
Yeah, when you started, you didn't have to join the sports and social club. It was completely optional. I think it was a penny a week, something like that. Not a lot more. But the thing was, if you wanted to play cricket for Fieldings, you had to be in the sports and social club and work at the factory. With rugby, that was not the case, because they needed very many more members to run two rugby teams. People who didn't work in the factory were allowed to play for Fieldings, but they still had to pay a membership of the sports and social. As I say, we ran two cricket teams. One cricket team used to play on Saturdays and Sundays, and then we ran an apprentice cricket team that played two or three matches a year. And there was also a big interdepartmental competition through the year. Cricket was very popular because, of course, we had a wonderful cricket ground. It was one of the best in the county. And, in fact, in the early days, when I first started, we used to play the county on a Sunday because there was no such thing as county cup competitions in those days, Sunday. Actually, they used to go around playing the clubs, providing they had the right ground and pitch to play on. The problem with the Fieldings ground was you couldn't charge admission fee because there was a public footpath ran straight through the middle of it. In fact, there was a stile at each end, which made it open to the public. So if you had a county match down there, if you wanted to make any money out of it, you had to go around with a blanket, you know. So that was the cricket. Rugby, as I say, you didn't have to be a member of the sports and social club. We used to run two teams in the North Gloucester combination. The problem with the Fieldings team was that because it was a work team, it had a bit of a stigma. And a lot of the best players roundabout wouldn't play for Fieldings. They used to go to clubs like Gordon League and Long Limbs, and that. There was a bit of a stigma on the run. But we always had, although we never used to win many matches, particularly in the seconds, we always had a good time, if you know what I mean. And we were always well looked after, because Jim Haynes, who was the secretary of the Sports and Social Club, used to look after the seconds particularly, and was very good. So we did enjoy it. And we used to play some quite prominent matches, but early in the season we used to play the Gloucester County Police every year, beat them a couple of times, and we used to play in the cup competitions as well. Never got anywhere in the cup competitions, but we did play. So we all enjoyed ourselves.
And would it have been Jim Haynes that collected that penny a week?
No, that would come out of your wages. Yeah, that'd be taken out of your wages straight into the sports and social funds. That, I think it was a penny a week. It wasn't much more. But as I say, unless you paid that, you couldn't play.
And you mentioned rugby and cricket. They were the ones that you were mainly involved in. What else was there?
Well, there was tennis. There were two very nice grass tennis courts that you could join the tennis section and play on. Okay, and there was a football pitch as well, where I can't remember the Works ever running a football team. It was definitely a rugby Works. Couldn't remember the Works running a football team, although I've seen football played on there. I think they used to rent it out occasionally to other football. But the rugby pitch was a good pitch. You used to go down the slope to the bottom.
And what sort of facilities would there have been? You mentioned that it was a public field with a stile at each end. Were there any other facilities at the Fielding Sports Grounds?
Not for many years. The Sports and Social didn't build a clubhouse down there I'm not talking about the railway coaches now, I'm talking about a clubhouse. And I think the building is practically still there, all four. Must have been in the 60s before that was built. Yeah, long after my time.
Yeah. So it was just a field and with a lot of sports grounds on it.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the railway carriages and how they were used eventually as changing rooms. Tell me about the facilities before then and how you used to get changed.
Well, we used to have a changing facility in Church Street, where we used to go upstairs in this house, and the changing rooms were upstairs. And then there was a hole in the floor, for want of a better word, with a wooden staircase going down to the ground floor where there was a sunken bath. So you would change upstairs, and irrespective of what the weather was, you then had to find your way down to the sports ground, which was, what, a mile and a half, I suppose, perhaps, around that. Either on your bike or scrounging the lift or walking even, you know, play your game. And then plastered in mud, you'd come all the way back again. So but it didn't matter. I mean, people enjoyed what they were doing, and that was it. And then after that, they put the two railway coaches down there, and they were all built in eventually, and with the bath facilities all in there. And that was, you know, second to none with that. We probably had the best changing facilities in the city at that time.
And what about the attendances at these games? How many people would have been on the field just watching the fielding's sports on a Saturday or a Sunday?
Not many. Could be as little as half a dozen. You know, just the people connected with the team, really. You know, you didn't get spectators coming from Uncle Tom all over the place, you know.
You've got a few pictures here of rugby teams either playing or posing for team shots on the ground, and there are some buildings in the backgrounds of some of them. Can you recall what they were?
Yeah. Well, if you look at this one, you can just see the corner of the main entrance into the ground, and then those houses there are the houses in Submeadow Road, right? And the chimney is the chimney that was on the power station down on the Ham. It looks a lot nearer than what it actually is, you know, because it was a big chimney.
And that's no longer there anymore.
Oh, no, the chimney's not there. No one, the power station's not there now. So we got on here. This wire net in here, you see, that's the tennis courts in the back there. That's the tennis courts. That's one of the buildings down at the docks, is that there? This is the road that went on past Submeadow Road on down into where there were one or two small factories down there, down towards the canal. You can see fuel tanks there.
And what sort of memories do these photos bring back for you?
Well, they're all memories of my youth, if you like, misspent or otherwise. Of course, I was married there. I'd lost my front teeth, as you can see.
And looking at the some of the photos of you playing, there are some with the goalposts of the rugby pitch there, and some with the balls as well. And you described the balls that you used as part of the rugby matches.
Ball, you see, so that's a new ball there. That's an old one. You can see how they used to go out of shape, more like a football than a rugby ball, when they got wet. And they used to be like a piece of soap when they were wet. You had a job to handle them. But, of course, rugby was a different game in those days. It was more a foot game than what it was a handling game at times. But different altogether to what they play today.
Yeah. And moving on to the cricket photos.
John Bayliss, that was his name. Yeah.
This is the man on the end of the back row with the photo with the goalposts in the background. And he went on to play for Gloucester, you said.
Yeah, John Bayliss, good player. Yeah, that's right.
So you were a pretty good outfit with these kind of star players in your midst.
Well, you come in at the bottom and you work your way up. You know, I mean, he came in as a youngster, and he obviously had talent, so he worked his way up out of the seconds into the first, and then got a trial for Gloucester. Went on from there. I can remember seeing him play out against the All Blacks on King's Home, you know. Yeah. And he had a big fruit and vegetable business at one time. John, on the corner of Stroud Road. Don't know where he is now.
And looking at another one of the posed shots, it's the one with the wire meshing of the tennis courts in the background. You mentioned that the two people on the ends of the middle row sat down were members of a certain family with a particular fielding connection.
Yeah, that's right. The Gill family, they originated from Church Street. The mother and father and a couple of sons. This son here lived in Bristol Road. But they did all the maintenance work, office cleaning and all sorts of things, you know, in the factory. You know, they were part of the structure, you know, I mean, the Gills. Yeah. And then he used to help with the rugby club.
You mentioned a funny story earlier of the cricket pavilion and the 1947 floods. Can you just tell us that story while the recorder's on, Brian, because it was a fantastic one.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, in the 47 floods, I think it was 47, wasn't it? 47 floods. The rugby field was about 6 feet lower than the cricket field. And the top end of the sports ground, there'd be a slope go down by the tennis courts. And in 1947, there was 10 feet of water on the rugby pitch. It lapped the crossbar on the rugby boats, 10 feet. And it would have gone over the cricket pitch by about 2 feet, I suppose, something like that. And Jim Haynes came to some of us one day and said, look, he said, the cricket pavilion's floated away. Now, the cricket pavilion was a long wooden shed, and that's all it was, resting on breeze blocks, you know, with a wooden floor. He said, the cricket pavilion's floated away. We better go and rescue it. So we had permission from the works. About four of us went down Westcott Street, and we borrowed a boat, because Westcott Street was flooded, of course. And we borrowed a boat, and we rowed out across Townham, across where the river was, and there was the cricket pavilion floating along by the power station. So we rescued it, tied it to the back of the boat, and rowed over to where the sports field was, because you could do that, because the water covered everything. And we knew where the cricket pavilion normally was because of the trees, so we tied it to the trees with the rope we had. And that was that. And when the water went down, of course, the rope hadn't been long enough, and the cricket pavilion was leant against the trees at an angle of about 45 degrees. So we had to go and rebuild it. But, yeah. Which makes me smile when I hear about Gloucester City Football. You know, they talk about building a new super-duper stadium on what they call Meadow Park, where we had 10'6" of water, and they wonder why it gets flooded.
And you were saying, I remember earlier when we were talking about the wooden patterns, you were saying that the wooden patterns were actually stored down at Hempstead as well.
Stored. I don't know whether we can see it on some of these. Yeah, if you see this fence here, well, if you went along a little bit further, they would be stored along that area.
Did you have any other memories of the sports and social side of fieldings that stick in your mind or that were particularly happy?
Well, the works directorship were always interested in what was going on the sports and social side. Jimmy Fielding in particular was always interested. And they would encourage it, of course, cricket and rugby. And they would encourage to also inter works matches with us and Heenan and Froude in Worcester. We used to go up there with the cricket team, and then the apprentices cricket team used to go up there and play cricket, and they used to come down to Gloucester as well. And then, when was this? 1950, wasn't it? The exhibition in London?
51, I think. Or was it 50? I wouldn't be too sure.
Was
it not the Great Exhibition or some such? Oh, the it was like a Jubilee one, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think what they called it in a minute. But Fieldings, on one Saturday, hired a train. And the whole works went up to London to this exhibition.
You went yourself? Yeah. And what do you recall of that?
Well, Johnny Mabbott, I've mentioned Johnny Mabbott, haven't I? And I, we went into London first, into centre of London. We got told off by a copper for playing jockeys on the lions in Trafalgar Square. I got a photograph of that at home.
I'd love to see that photo.
And they took us down off the lions and put us in a police car, and we thought, oh God, we're in jail, you know. But instead of that, they took us down to the South Bank where the exhibition was and dropped us off and said, now, don't be naughty, boys, go and enjoy yourself, you know. So we had this train for the day, and great time was had by all. Well, that was the sort of things that used to be done, you know.
Was that the biggest scale outing that the whole works went on that you remember?
The only one that I can remember. That was a special occasion, you see.
And the rest, it tended to be sort of either in sports teams or other parts of the social side, like Skittles.
And the rugby, of course, we always had our annual dinners. And one of the directors usually would come to the dinner. Both the cricket club and the rugby club, we always had dinner. Well, you got some photographs there of the dinners. Yeah.
And were they quite happy occasions, a bit to drink?
Yeah, of course they were.
And you said they were in the Mercer's Hall?
In the Mercer's Hall mainly. We did have a couple in the old Cadena in Eastgate Street. Do you remember where the Cadena was?
Where was that?
You know where Starbucks is now?
Yes.
That block of shops there. Well, it used to be there, and you went in sort of to an entrance hall, and then back behind that was quite a big hall where people used to hold dances and dinners and all the rest of it.
Were there any other sort of general dances or get-togethers, for example, at Christmas or Easter times?
No, not really. Christmas, you were given half a day off at Christmas. You usually went in, because of course you only had 2 days off at Christmas. You didn't get a long Christmas holiday. You had Christmas Day and Boxing Day, and that was it. You know, unless you were lucky enough to get Boxing Day on a Sunday or Christmas on a weekend, where they had to give you days in lieu because they were on a weekend, then you would be back into work the day after Boxing Day, you know. But on the Christmas Eve, we'd be working in the morning, and then the management would send a message down, all right, let them go home, you know. But we've had a barrel of beer on the marking off table and that sort of thing, you know. And the directors used to turn a blind eye to that, you know.
Was the works decorated in any way?
Not unless it was desperate. It cost money.